T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
I willfully will talk to you.
I cannot. I have willful. Had trouble all morning with the word willful.
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 Willful. Want to play some willful ball?
Yes. I see you have your PGA hat on.
I do.
Now, did you get another color? Because you have that gray
no,
one.
No, I have this, and I have a shirt that kind of matches it.
What'd you bring Greg and I? Souvenirs?
Good stories.
Stories?
I'll tell you stories.
We want some souvenirs, man.
Well, I'm sorry.
You got a tee for us or anything?
I was hoping to get hit by a ball and get a free autographed glove, but that didn't happen. So
you didn't bring us anything.
No, I didn't bring you in. Just memories. I can tell you all kinds of great stories.
Beep, 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 beep. Beep, 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 beep.
Whoa. So, yeah.
Well, great.
Yeah.
So it was enjoyable.
It was wonderful.
Right.
Wonderful. Great people there all the way around, from the volunteers to the fans were awesome. And it was just, it was a great time.
Except the parking scenario was a little weird.
Well, you only had one exit, which is just the way Bellerive is. I don't know where you would put another exit that all those buses could use. But they had 200 buses. The day on Friday when it rained, when we left, there were buses lined up all the way from Bellerive all the way to 141 down Ladue Road.
Whoa.
All the way. And so, I mean, yeah, it was crowded leaving, and that was kind of a pain, but I don't know what else you could do.
So what kind of buses were they? School buses?
Oh, no. They were nice coaches. Like,
whoa.
That teams travel on, that if you take a tour, those kind of, and they must have been, I saw license plates on them from Pennsylvania. So it must have been like every bus in the Midwest almost. And it was crowded leaving. It was crowded there. But that's what happens when you have a big event like that.
Right. You know? Great. Sounds like you had fun.
It was great.
Well, thanks for sharing.
My pleasure. Any more memories, stories, I'll tell you.
Great.
Okay.
Folks, thanks and welcome for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly. Call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. On Saturday mornings, we get together to discuss your yard, your landscape, garden, houseplants, potting mixes, soil improvement, pruning, bugs, diseases, plant removal, plant installation. Remember my words, open opportunities. After that, it's going to take physical and mental effort on your part to make it a continuing race in this marathon. So Greg's producing again today. Thanks to him. I greatly appreciate it. He always keeps me from stumbling, or if I do stumble, he helps me quickly recover. I'm Mike Miller, by the way. I've been doing the Garden Hotline since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available in various locations. And I write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine. I just submitted my article for the November-December issue of this year. So during the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, or you'd like to give a gift certificate for a walk and talk, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. And today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, I was heading north on 55. I wasn't exactly sure where I wanted to go. But I'll tell you, this morning, let's see, what time was it? Probably between 6:15 and 6:30. The clouds were covering the sun just enough so it made the sun look like a perfect yellow-orange ball. I mean, it wasn't glaring enough that I had to put the visor down or sunglasses or anything. It was just fantastic. So I decided to exit on Broadway. I saw, there's a little bitty park there. And what it is it's part of Anheuser-Busch. So it was kind of where they put all their trailers. It's at the intersection of Broadway and Cave Street. I think Cave is where Anheuser-Busch or whoever way back when used to put their beer to keep it cool. So a chorus of a million crickets were chirping. They were on the hillside of Highway 55. And a sign reads, Anheuser-Busch property, no trespassing. Do-do-do-do. I didn't know if if they would come out and get me if I did. So I did do a little trespassing. I'm sorry. But they have bald cypress as street trees there. The lawn has been recently mowed. And, the crabapple grove that's in this little park space. It's seen better days. There are bald cypress knees invading that space. And that's probably had an impact on the crabapple's ability to keep doing what it's supposed to do as well as it possibly can. What is a bald cypress knee? Well, that's the roots. When they're growing in a swamp area, they push these roots up above this water surface, and that's how they get oxygen so they can survive. There's a utility box or electric box or something sitting in the middle of this green space. I wonder what that's for. I don't know. I have no idea. But there's a trio of benches facing south, offering a respite for anyone. Other trees in the space include Austrian pines, ginkgo trees. There's a grove of about 6 or 7 ginkgo trees. And underneath the ginkgo trees, a fantastic carpeted area of wild strawberries. And along the 7th Street side, which is on the west side of this park, I guess park or green space, they bred for pears. That's the street trees there. There's also some viburnums, some miscanthus, some Norway spruce, which soften the parking lot fencing. A few yews with some green moss growing underneath them. And across 7th Street, right from where I was, the South Broadway Athletic Club Gymnasium reminds, this obviously not being used for a long, long time, reminds from times long ago. The clock is ticking. Time for me to go. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
KMOX is the weather station. Get the forecast here every 10 minutes, mornings and afternoons, with weather bulletins at once. On the voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, is summer over yet? I don't know. It's still pretty darn hot. But 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We're going to start off in Creve Coeur and go into Sally's yard. Hi, Sally.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
My dog is fine. I'm looking for some recommendation. I have 3 pin oaks that border the back of my yard. Behind the pin oaks, about probably 10 feet, is a 6-foot privacy fence. And beyond the privacy fence is my neighbor's yard. What I'm looking for is a tree or shrub that grows about maximum 15 feet to block or screen the view into my neighbor's yard. It has to be able to grow under the canopy of these 3 oak trees, and it has to have a nice canopy that grows kind of horizontal so that it will fill in that space.
How old are these trees, your pin oak trees? How big are they?
Well, they're varying ages. One is over 50, 55 years old.
Yikes.
And the other 2 are probably less than 40 years old. But they're very healthy.
I'm just asking because that means there's a substantial amount of root systems underneath the soil. So anything that you put there is going to have a really, really difficult time to get established because of the existing pin oak trees.
I see.
Now, can you sacrifice some of your yard coming out, not going between the pin oaks and the fence?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
So are you talking about planting in between the pin oaks? Or are you talking planting between the pin oaks and the privacy fence?
Yeah, a little of both. The space that I would like to fill certainly is between where the pin oaks grow, but behind it, closer to the fence.
Yeah, I was asking if you could plant in front of the pin oaks because that might be a better opportunity for getting something established, but that's going to sacrifice some of your yard if you did that.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a good plan.
Okay.
To plant it in front. It would need to be between the pin oak and the fence.
Well, okay, so you cannot just plan on routinely every 10 feet putting something in or what, you know, measure wise because of the root systems of these pin oak trees.
I see.
So probably, and I'm assuming that you don't necessarily need something that's evergreen.
No, okay. It doesn't have to be evergreen. It doesn't have to be flowering. It just has to have a canopy that will screen the view from my yard into my neighbor's yard.
Based, probably what I would look at is there's a native tree called serviceberry.
Serviceberry, okay.
It flowers in the springtime before the dogwoods. It's pretty tough. It's pretty durable. But I would recommend that as opposed to anything else that I could possibly think of that could handle, you know, the situation with these pin oak trees.
Okay, and that is a tree, correct?
Yes. What you need, I would give you the genus, but you have a pencil?
Yes.
A-M-E-L-A-N-C-H-I-E-R. Amelanchier, that's the genus. And you want the variety that's called Arborea, A-R-B-O-R-E-A. So that means Arborea means tree, serviceberry tree type.
Okay. And that can be found at nurseries around town?
Yes, it's a native to Missouri tree.
Great.
So give it a try. I wouldn't, and because you want it to look somewhat natural, don't put all the same sizes in. Mix the sizes and everything else. And I wouldn't buy a whole bunch of them at once. I would try one or two and see how they do, and then maybe add every year, you know, a couple more.
And are these fairly fast-growing or not?
Well, I mean, they're native, so no, they're not necessarily going to be fast-growing.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate that suggestion. Thank you so much.
Yep, good luck. And now let's go from Creve Coeur to Baldwin into Nancy's yard. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about some weeds. They are prevalent all over the front yard, and they look like small clover with a little bend in the middle of each of the leaves. And they have real stickery root or stems that go into the ground. When you pull them out, they're really tough, little stickery kind of roots or whatever I can say.
So what are you trying to do, get rid of them?
Oh, I'm assuming. Yeah. They're just stinkers.
Yeah, I'd probably take a look at, you know, some kind of broadleaf weed killer. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have to get it on there pretty darn quick. And the thing is, if you're going to put this on to try to kill these weeds, in essence, you cannot put any new grass seed down because even though it's a broadleaf weed killer, it can impact newly germinated seed.
Right. Okay, that sounds good.
So like a Weed Be Gone or something like that, experiment with it. Don't get a huge amount. You know, don't get like 4 gallons of it or anything like that. Get a small amount and try it on one like 3 by 3 by 3 foot area and see how effective it is as far as, you know, getting this stuff under control and how fast.
Okay. Do you have any idea what it's called? It looks like a mini clover, kind of.
Well, I mean, it could be black medic. There's a couple different things. It's, you know, it's a little difficult to, you know, from your description. It's stickery. It's this. No, it's, you know, but I mean, there's a couple different things. So just,
I don't know if it helps any, but it's very close to the ground, very short.
Right.
And just took over after the rain. My goodness sakes. Okay. Well, I'll give that a try. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yes. And now let's go, stay in West County and go over to Ann's yard. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Mike. I have an area of ivy I'm pulling up, and I want to plant grass seed there. I'm working on pulling up the ivy, but I went to St. Louis Composting and got some compost, and I'm going to use a rototiller to work up that ground. Should I put the compost down next? And the next question is, and can I plant grass seed there in the fall?
Basically, it's made, how long established was this ivy?
It's been in there about 20 years.
Okay, so you're not going to get rid of it in one pull, one anything. So unless you just, you're going to have kind of somewhat of a nightmare because it sounds like you really want to get stuff done quick to get this thing taken care of. But if you could be patient and go ahead, you could rototill it up and everything else. Don't put the compost down, but just watch, you know, for this fall almost and see how much more ivy keeps coming up. And get either pull that stuff out or get it under control with an herbicide and maybe plan on doing the grass seeding.
In the spring.
Yeah, in May.
Okay. When I hang up, would you mind running through the best time of the year to thatch and the best time of the year to core aerate.
Okay, what kind of lawn do you have?
Part of it's zoysia and part of it's, I don't know what, I don't know, just grass. I don't know.
Okay.
A great amount of it is zoysia.
Okay, so.
But not all of it is.
Yeah, the zoysia, you want to do the core aeration and dethatching basically in the early spring as soon as it starts, let's say, greening up. You don't want to do them both in the same year, though.
Okay.
So 1 year you can do the dethatching, and then the next year do the core aeration and put some compost, like a half inch of compost down right after you core aerate. But that's got to be, or, you know, when it starts greening, it's hard to put a calendar date on that. This year it greened up a little bit early. Some years it's a little bit later. So just watch, and when you start seeing some green sprigs in your zoysia, that's when you want to do this physical stuff.
Okay, when it begins to green. Okay, what about if it's just fescue or that kind of thing?
It's basically the opposite. You want to do it in the fall. That's the best time to do it. Fescue, bluegrass. So either one, the dethatching and or, you know, the core aeration.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Certainly. Let's go now to Ledoux and to Pete's yard. Hi, Pete.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Hey. So quick follow-up on the ivy question. I've got an area that I'm trying to reclaim and put some flowers and whatnot, and I have a bunch of ivy there that I've sprayed with a herbicide, and that ivy seems to be pretty tough because it's showing signs of life.
Yes.
That's something you think I need to nail multiple times?
Yeah, and I would, you know, if you can, I don't know if you cut your own grass or whoever does, before you put another herbicide down on top of it, I would mow it and really chop it up really well, because, and then put the herbicide down right after you mow, because you've opened up all kinds of wounds. That lets the herbicide get absorbed in much quicker and much better. Because this time of year, as I, you know, I've said every week for the last couple of weeks, the plants are developing a waxy cuticle. They did that a while ago because it was so hot and dry. And that helps them from dehydrating so much, the foliage. So the ivy has it as well. So consequently, the herbicide may not be as effectively absorbed. So this is not the ideal time to be doing this, but it's a time that you chose to do it.
Okay. Real quick one. I also have some daylilies that don't seem to be bothered at all by this herbicide. Do they have a particularly, and I did break them up a little bit, like you suggested, when I sprayed them, but they seem to be coming right back. Very resilient plants.
So what herbicide are you using? Are you using like a broadleaf weed killer?
No, I'm using, it's a Spectracide product, but it's supposed to be killing all plant matter.
So, yeah, why it's not getting the daylilies, I don't know, unless you're just not getting enough on in the daylilies. Or also the daylilies, the foliage is probably headed towards dormancy. So, again, they're not absorbing as much, so that may be the part of the factor as well.
Okay. Can I ask one real quick question, which is actually my original question on the arborvitaes? I've got a lineup of them, and I need to move them. Won't bore you with the details. What's the life expectancy of transferred arborvitae?
All depends on who's doing it, how big they are, and everything else. You have to have a substantial root ball, or else I wouldn't bother, you know, doing it. I would say leave them and just get some new ones.
Okay, because I've got seven of them side by side. They're touching each other. So
right.
Like, I probably would
pull out every other one or something.
Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about that. All right. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Good luck. And let's see if we can get another question before break. Virginia is in Kirkwood. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, Mike. I have had a Bradford pear removed from the end of our driveway, and there's kind of a the ground goes down from that point, so the Bradford pear's roots were showing on that on the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is that trying to get grass to grow in that area is terrible.
Right.
The weeds are growing wonderfully well. What can I do? Any suggestions on that?
Basically, the root system, even if the stump was ground out for your Bradford pear or any tree, the root systems will stay viable for several years after it's been beheaded. So during that time that, you know, the root system is still viable, it's going to be absorbing nutrients and moisture, and it's going to be competing with anything that you put there. But the weeds are tough enough to be able to, you know,
yeah.
I mean, not every weed can grow there. Only certain weeds can grow in that circumstance. So
I had thought of the roots still being alive. So it's the same problem as trying to grow grass under a tree.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then slowly but surely, the roots will start imploding. And depending upon how healthy the tree was and everything else, any place between 3 to 4 to 5 years before the roots entirely implode.
Oh, what a pain in the neck. Okay. You answered my question. Thanks much.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Excuse me while I eat one of my mistakes. Apparently, last week, I made a mistake. I can't believe it, but I did. Lawn doctor, I gave the wrong phone number out. So if you want to contact Lawn Doctor, go to lawndoctor.com. Forget the phone numbers that I'm saying. Lawndoctor.com. That's the best way to go about it. Boy, oh boy, I hate to eat my mistakes. All right, let's go back to the phones. Bob from Baldwin, how are you?
Good, Mike. How you doing?
Very good.
Listen, we have a question about what to plant in an area that is that drains but is very wet. Well, not necessarily now, but in the spring and when there's a lot of rain. There are two big a series of arborvitaes on each side, but a couple of them died because I think they were planted too low. And we wanted to fill that void in with maybe something like crepe myrtle or whatever to give some color. But it is an area very prone to wetness.
Basically, crepe myrtle won't survive.
Okay.
Too wet. So okay. Even if it's just wet in the spring or whatever, you know, it's just going to drown them. So
okay.
That's not possible. There is maybe, are you looking shrub-wise, I'm assuming, because you mentioned crepe myrtle, not trees?
Well, we were thinking something with some color, you know, to add to the, there's a very nice barrier of 14 to 16 feet arborvitae there. So, but just as I say, two of them died in the center.
Right.
And we just wanted something that, you know, that would maybe add color, blooms, late bloom sometime in the summer.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, let me tell you, there's a variety. It's a shrub type dogwood. So it's not a tree dogwood. It's called red twig dogwood.
Okay.
So the branches are red in the wintertime after the foliage falls off. And what I would do is get the one with a variegated leaf. So the leaves are basically, from a distance, look white. So all summer long, it's just going to look like a white flowering shrub. Then when the leaves fall off in the fall, then you're just going to see red twigs through the wintertime.
Okay. And do they, when they, as they start maturing, what's the diameter? What's the growth?
Depends upon the variety. If you get Ashanti, I-S-A-N-T-I, that's more of a dwarf one. If you get the standard one, you're probably looking at something maybe 6 to 8 feet wide, but it's going to take it several years to get there. And the other one, the Ashanti, which is a smaller one, is going to be about, let's say, 4 to 5 feet wide. And probably maximum height, you're looking at maybe 6+ feet.
Okay. Would you please spell that one again, the dwarf one?
I-S-A-N-T-I. Now, not necessarily every nursery is going to have that particular variety, but just look at red twig dogwoods with a variegated leaf online and, you know, just write down a couple different names because the garden centers, you know, they don't necessarily always have the same one because there's multiple types.
I understand. And then the problem, not a problem, life is filled with opportunities. We are also blessed with the deer issue. Will they like the red twig dogwood or not?
Probably no more than anything else. If you're arborvitae, because a lot of times arborvitae get munched up.
Well, didn't use the right term with that. This was something special that was planted. They're giants, and they have done real well. So
yeah.
They have not been bothered by the deer. The deer do not like them, nor does snow or ice. But in other words, the red twig's not going to be bothered any more than anything else.
Right, exactly.
Any other options for that area?
I mean, when it's wet like that, you know, there's a sweet bay magnolia, but that's going to be about a 10 to 15 foot high magnolia tree that can take wet soil.
Yeah, that's too high. So your top choice would be the red twig dogwood.
Right.
Okay. Thanks a million, Mike.
All right. Good luck. And now let's go westward to Wentzville into Craig's yard. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Mike. How do we? When's a good time to trim back burning bushes, and how aggressive can you get with them?
You never, you know, personally, I say never cut off more than 20 to 25% of anything.
Okay.
Because, and I would wait, because you're growing them so you can see the red leaves in the fall. I'd wait until leaves have turned red and the leaves start falling off, prune it at that time. Or you can wait until spring before the new growth begins and then prune them at that, prune them in the spring.
Okay, great. And also, my irises, the last couple of years, haven't been getting a lot of flowers. Do I need to thin those out?
You can thin them, but any of the clumps, the bunches of leaves that don't have a flower stalk, in other words, that didn't flower this year, just throw them away.
Oh, okay.
Because they're just old. Now, people want to argue with me about that, but because just some of the varieties just kind of poop out after a, you know, a certain amount of age.
And they're pretty old, I guess, because they've been with the house for a long time.
So. Oh, okay.
Okay, so if they're not doing any good, just get rid of them.
Right.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you.
Yep, and you can always buy some tubers, some new ones, you know, at your favorite garden center.
And put those in. I put those in the fall then, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Millie. Wow, first time in Illinois over to Collinsville. Hi, Millie.
Hi, Mike. I need to know if there's something that will kill wild violets other than digging them.
They are very, very, very tough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could take, do you have them in big clumps, you know, like multiples, or are they just kind of sporadically in your lawn?
They're spreading in my lawn, mainly from the neighbors. I've tried to keep them out, but it's just almost impossible.
Yeah, they're just really, really tough. If you can be patient, you can take a chair or a stool out with you and just step on the violet, each individual one, and then just paint some Roundup right on those leaves that you stepped on. That's probably the best way you're going to go about getting rid of it.
Yeah, okay.
Because, I mean, I've found personally, even though a lot of the broadleaf weed killers like Weed Be Gone and stuff say they'll kill violets, I don't, you know, I'm not seeing that happen all that often.
Yeah, I've sprayed them sometimes, you know, with the Roundup, but not, you know, crushing the leaves, and it doesn't really help much. But I'll try breaking the leaves and see if that helps.
Right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're going to have to do it pretty quickly because they're headed towards dormancy, just like any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they do go dormant.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep. Now back to Baldwin again into Jerry's yard. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good.
I called you a couple weeks ago about Nutsedge, and you gave me the answer, and I got to tell you, it worked fabulous. My lawn service tried to do something, and what they put down, I think, made it even grow more. So, yeah, I thank you very much. Now I've got a second invasive problem. What the heck do you do to get rid of honeysuckle? We had bushes that were probably 15 feet tall. They made great cover for deer. The neighborhood cut them down. But now we've got the stumps in the ground and the stuff sprouting up again.
Right.
What can I do? And I'm talking about a 100-foot wide yard that has nothing but stumps. And they're probably 2 to 5 inches in diameter, out of which I've got new shoots coming up. I know the stumps are going to be tough. I've got to drill them and burn them out and all that stuff. But how do I get them dormant so I can start to kill the stuff off?
Well, basically, how tall are the stumps that they left?
Up to maybe 4 or 5 inches.
So how about, so pretty short.
Yeah.
So in reality, probably what you should do is go to your favorite garden center and get Roundup for killing woody plants. It'll say poison ivy killer and woody plant killer. And, you know, just that's, you know, try it in an area, you know, a section at a time, and that's going to be the best way because it's systemic. It's going to go down through the stem leaves that are coming up, and then it should kill the entire root system of the whole honeysuckle. But this is going to be a long, involved process.
When you say long, are you talking about years or months or what?
Years.
I'm an old man. Come on. I hope to be able to call you back.
The best thing to do then is just don't look at them.
You want to buy a house? All right, you said poison ivy and what? Wood killer?
Yeah, it says it's a type of Roundup, but it will say poison ivy on the label and woody plant killer.
And woody.
Right.
Okay. I'll give it a try, okay. And maybe I'll call you back before I get too old.
Yeah, because regular Roundup won't kill it. It doesn't kill woody plant materials. If this, you know, if this the stumps were higher, like 4 or 5 feet, I would say cut a half the length of the stump off and paint this Roundup right on that stump. But since they're so short, that's going to be just too much work.
Have a great day.
Okay, sorry. And remember, don't look at the honeysuckle.
It's awful hard to miss. Again, thanks for your help.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Get ready for the Cards and Brewers tonight. Ameren Total Access 520. First pitch 6:15. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX. Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go, and we're headed to North County and going into Wayne's yard. Wayne's yard. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing?
Very good.
I have a question about roses of Sharon again. I've called you about this before on how to trim them. Is any time of the year for these type of plants able to be trimmed?
Well, if you prune them in the summer when they're in, you know, sort of in their flowering cycle, you just cut off the buds for potential flowers. So, yes, they can be pruned any time of year, but the best time to prune them is any time after the foliage falls off, all the way up until the new foliage starts growing the next year. So you've got about a six-month window of time. So sometime between October and March. That's
right.
Going to be the best time to do it.
Okay, but the problem is that I did that, and I've done that 2 years in a row, and whenever you start getting the growth and you're in the middle of summer, the plant, after the branches that you have cut, grow new branches,
right,
which produces more buds, which makes those branches start leaning even worse because you have so many buds per branch that it's just unbelievable. How far back should you cut, let's say, an original branch that comes off the trunk of the tree?
Well, are these in full sun?
Yes.
So they're in full sun? Because usually you don't get that willowy growth in full sun.
Oh,
so,
we get it bad.
Yeah. So really bad. You're just going to have to maybe, like, look at each individual. I don't know how many you have, but cut, you know, let's say half the branches lower than what you would the other half. So cut some of them back the whole, you know, I don't want to say all the way to the ground, but cut them back to, a couple feet and then see what the growth does from that standpoint. See if you can get these trunks to be a little bit more substantial.
Right. The trunk itself is not the problem. It's the branches that are coming off the trunk.
Right. But I'm saying cut back the branches, half the branches back to the trunk, and see what happens as a result of that.
Okay, so go back half.
Right.
Okay, that's kind of what I'm looking for. And that's the reason why I'm asking you about this time of the year, because, like I said, I did it in the winter, and it looked fine, looks like it should be just fine. And come the middle of summer, I was really wrong. That's why I'm thinking about just doing it now to get it to where it should be, I think, with the weight of the buds and everything on it, and see if this works any better, because cutting it after all the foliage has fallen off just doesn't seem to be doing the trick. On a couple of them, yes, but on most of them, no.
Well, once you prune them, they're not going to push out any new growth on the ones that you pruned this late in the season. They're not going to put out any flower buds. They're probably not going to do anything. I don't even know if they're going to put out.
I'm thinking that just the shaping of it now with the foliage on it might give me a better idea, because in the winter, it just apparently it hasn't been working.
Okay. Yeah, give it a try and see what happens.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm not going to kill them.
No, you shouldn't kill them. As long as the trunk is healthy, as long as the leaves are full size. The reason why I ask if they're in the sun, there's a house down the street from me that has Rose of Sharon growing underneath the shade of a sycamore tree, and they are super willowy. And they're the leaf size is undersized and everything else. But if you got full size leaves and you're lucky enough to have all these flower buds, even if they are heavy, then that's kind of a good way. But you want to kind of get them under control.
That's what I'm trying to do, is get it under control. I mean, they're healthy as can be. It's just unbelievable.
You're lucky.
Oh, thank you. All right, you have a great day.
Yeah, maybe not lucky. You just have great skill. So thanks. Let's head over to Columbia, Illinois, into Glenn's yard. Hi, Glenn.
Morning, Mike. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I have heard you talk about the ground augers, like for gardens and everything, drilling, you know, 4, 5, 6 inches down.
Right.
With my full size, very, very mature pin oaks, and I've got gumballs. They're losing some limbs, and some of them are starting to die. If I went around putting like 4 or 5 holes around a tree this fall, once the heat lets up, and dropped in a few pellets, like maybe an inch worth of 12, 12, 12, like a triple 12, would that work on getting some fertilization into these big old mature trees?
No, you don't want to put that kind of fertilizer. You don't want to put fertilizer in like that. You're feeding the soil, then the soil will in turn feed your plants, your trees or whatever. So you want to come out half the distance between the extension of the branches and the trunk, start augering holes all the way around about a foot apart, then go out 2 feet further all the way around, and each hole backfill with compost. That's the best thing you can possibly do. And older mature trees are going to have dead branches. There's dead wood. There's no getting around it. There's nothing. And certainly fertilizer like that is not going to do a darn thing as far as helping the health of the tree, especially something like triple 12, which is basically developed as an agricultural type fertilizer, a one season shot type thing.
I see. Okay. All right. To your lady, just as an add-on here, to your lady that was calling a couple of weeks ago, wanted to know where the hummingbirds were. Right now, I'm sitting on a deck talking to you, and we have hummingbird wars. There's 4 or 5 of them. Would I recommend that she plant some canna bulbs?
Right.
Because they love those bright top red tops about 30 or 40 feet away from your feeder, because then the girls can get in and the big ruby throat won't be chasing them away. So put some other plants out like that they enjoy. Like she has a shrimp plant. They love shrimp plants too.
Right. And I've got hyacinth bean vines, and that's what they come into my yard. I've got the cannas too. They don't seem to spend as much time around the cannas, the red flower cannas, as they do around the hyacinth bean vines. So. Okay. Yeah, so, and also that lady, maybe she should move over to Columbia, Illinois, since you've got such a...
Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Sure. And let's see, we probably won't be able to get another call in because we're going to have to take a break. But if you have any questions or concerns, or just take a look out your window, maybe something that you haven't thought of, then you can get your name and where you're calling from. Just call and Greg will answer the phone. So other things that you need to still be doing, even though we have had some rains and everything else, thank goodness, but the crabgrass has just exploded. Spurge is everywhere. So weed control, as far as how much you can do, it's going to be pre-emergence next year for when the forsythia is in bloom. That's when you got to get rid of the summertime, the warm season weeds, spurge, all that other stuff. Like I said, crabgrass, foxtail, and everything else. But this year, the crabgrass, I went by a yard in my neighborhood. They didn't have any grass at all. All it was crabgrass. And it was all in flower now, and those sort of scary-looking things coming up are just filled with seeds. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, will be taking your questions after the news.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly, for passing the baton for the second hour of the Garden Hotline. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. You can get in line with your questions, comments, or concerns. And thanks for having me on your show. You can call. We can talk about plant selection, annuals, how your annual's doing. As I said before, begonias have been my champion plant for decades. And then this year, I probably lost, 75% of the ones, or they just were dysfunctional, let's put it that way. But the last 25% look spectacular like they normally do. So I can't quite figure, and they were all kind of in the same, planting circumstance. So I don't know what's going on. And you can head to your favorite garden center. They may not have them yet, but soon they're going to be getting the spring flowering bulbs. You can buy them now, but just don't plant them yet because the ground is still too warm. So you can buy them so you can get the best selection of everything that you want and just hold on to them in a paper bag in a cool location. And that's about all you need to do. How about your ground covers? as lady was calling about getting rid of ivy and converting it back into lawn. You just have to be patient. If you have a well-established any type of ground cover, get rid of it entirely before you try to put some grass or anything else in there. Or if you don't, it's just going to haunt you. So, and roses, trees, shrubs, water gardens, vines, whatever. Greg, who does a lot of the newsroom type stuff behind the scenes, he said his passion flower vine was striking. He said he's never seen it with this many flowers on it as it has this year. So that's great. So, and remember my words, comments, and opinions, not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered as an option for you to consider. Greg is producing, so he's the one that answers the phone, and he will take your name and where you're calling from. That's about all you need to do. Then you go onto the computer, and then I look at the screen, and then I take from the top down. During the week, I do landscape consulting, where I call it a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, you can find my email address or phone number, and you can contact me, and we can set up a time where I can come out to your home. Take a look. Problem solving, aesthetics, or whatever it happens to be. And now, special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me. It's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. And again, these garden clubs and everything else and plant societies, this is just, I mean, it's an ideal way to get yourself immersed into something where you've got people that are in the field doing the work themselves for the most part. I think 90% of them are. And they can give you those little tips that can make a huge difference on how well and how successful your plant material is going to be. So the main garden club type things, they talk about everything, kind of like the Garden Hotline does. But then there's individual ones that can talk about, or they focus on, let's say, iris, or they focus on rock gardens, or they focus on roses or that type thing. There are so many plant societies and garden clubs in this region. It's unbelievable. So if you have any interest, you can go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website. That's MOBOT, Missouri Botanical Garden, mobot.org, and just look up the Plant Society. It doesn't have all of them by any means, but there is so many. So, I mean, it's a great way and neat people, too. It's just absolutely fantastic. So if you have any interest in doing that, that would be absolutely perfect. So let's go to a phone call and head out to St. Charles in Anthony's yard. Hi, Anthony.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for calling for my call.
Sure.
I have a problem with my lawn. I have the tall fescue lawn. It was beautiful all summer. The heat stress of the summer. I have an aeration system that just doesn't cover it to the extent I was watering each zone maybe 18 to 20 minutes a day. It just went dormant, you know, a lot of area died. And what I would like to know, should I pyre rake that dead grass out of there before I would aerate it and overseed it and then put compost on it? What would the procedure do in first, second, or third?
You probably don't necessarily need to power rake it if you're, you know, because you've had a good lawn. It just got fried. I mean, there's no getting around it. And you know, regardless of the amount of water, how you put it on or anything else, it can't compensate because of just the heat factor. Because a lot of plant material, people have sent me pictures and everything else. And I've been to people's yards where they, you know, they really have been watering and it just hasn't made that much difference because of what the, you know, what happened. So I would just go ahead and core aerate and then put the grass seed down, then cover that with the compost. That's probably the recommendation I would make.
That's what I believe I've had in mind doing.
Great. Perfect. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Goodbye.
See, Anthony didn't even have to call. He already knew what he was going to do. So Michael lives in Baldwin. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Great show.
Well, thanks.
Listen, I have two questions for you. Number one, I did it finally this year. I pulled out all of my peonies. I had six bundles of them, maybe a foot by, I don't know, foot in diameter. So I pulled them all out. I dug holes, 1 foot in diameter, 1 foot deep, and I filled these holes with the Scotch potting mix and peat moss and mixed that up, and then I pulled those out. Then I went and bought roses, knockout roses, double knockout roses, the 1 gallon size. I put those in right up to, I put them in there so that the top of the rose bush is at the level of the ground, and I filled all that back in with the potty mix and all that good stuff. And so these are double knockout roses, red and pink, and my house faces east, so they get at least 6 hours of sun. And they're doing just fantastic. Oh, and then my question for you is this. So before I had the Scott's mulch all around the peonies, so I'm wondering if I should pull that out, put in white stone, and I use the preen down before that. So how do I take care of these so that they, number one, continue to grow, and number two, do you pull the blooms off once they fall off? My second question is, the knockout roses is the main thing, but my second question is, so I also have a Japanese maple on one of the house, and so it's not doing so well. It hasn't been for the last couple of years, but I covered it with the preen, and I put down the mulch, and I'm wondering if that could be a problem. So I wonder if you can talk to me about the roses, how to care for them to make sure they grow well, and what do I do about this Japanese maple?
Well, basically with the roses, if you just, you didn't really give them any real soil in there when you mixed, when you poured all this stuff in there. So I would be a little concerned about that. I would also be a little bit concerned if you planted them at grade, they're going to, because of the potting mix and the peat moss that you put down in there, that's got a lot of air pockets in it. It's going to shrink and those air pockets are going to go away. And then around the roses, they're going to be a depression and water's going to sit there and that could be problematic. So I would say that would be one of my concerns. Second of all, if you're going to grow roses, you have to have some fertilizer. But we're at basically the end of the season to do any kind of fertilizing or fertilizer with nitrogen on roses because they have to go head towards dormancy. So that's, I would say just get ready next year, get some rose fertilizer, and get ready to go as soon as the foliage starts coming out. As far as cutting off the spent flowers, that's really up to you. That's an aesthetic call. It doesn't make that much difference at all. And if your Japanese maple has been in the decline for a period of time, I would say whatever there is right there right now, it's probably, I don't know how old it is or anything else, but it's probably just kind of at the end of its life.
Oh, I see. So it's like 14 years old. I've been living there 14 years now. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's one of the ones that have the very dissected leaf or if it's a regular standard size or anything else. But we're finding that a lot of times their lifespan is not as long as what we think or as long as what we see in other locations.
I see. So what do I do about these roses? Have I did the wrong thing? Do I pull them out and put like potting soil in there? Or
no, not potting soil. You should mix whatever you've put in there with the existing soil surrounding the area that you planted. So in other words, you have to have some existing soil because if this is luxurious area that you've put down in the hole, the rose roots are going to hit that horrible soil or normal soil on the perimeter, and they're going to turn back in and stay where it's nice and easy to grow. So that's why I always tell people to mix any kind of soil amendments they're putting in the ground with the existing soil to give the plant material root systems a taste of reality.
Uh-huh. Okay. But I didn't do it's some of that in there. There's no way to get all the dirt out. There's some of that, because it's a very clay-type thing. Once you get down about 6 inches, you're in ball when you're in clay. So
I know. The whole region's that way.
To try to give it some kind of something to grab onto, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Ellisville, so I know about the soils in West County and every place else, too.
All right. Okay.
So you just have to, mix it all together. It's just with a rototiller or whatever.
Okay. I got you.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. And good luck with that. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I've been cutting my grass. I have zoysia, and I've been battling the weeds. And I'm finally, but I'm going to go pre-emergent again in the springtime for the warm season stuff. And I have not had a problem with the cool season weeds. So in other words, if you have henbit and things like that, those are the ones that you want to put the pre-emergent down this time of year. The annual cool season weeds, henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrass. I do have some annual bluegrass, but I've been digging the clumps out individually. But there are some other things. There's rabbit foot clover, and but these are ones that the seeds are really starting to germinate now. You can't even really see them. But this is why you want to put a pre-emergent down this time of year from mid to late August to try to get these cool season weeds under control. Shepherd's purse is another one of the cool season weeds. And so anyway, I've been cutting my grass, my zoysia. They always say, cut it really short. No, don't cut it really short, especially when we have a summer like this. It's been so hot and dry. Longer blades keep the crown, guess what, cooler. And so it doesn't sunburn so much. So I've been cutting my, I have my mower set at like 5 inches. So, well, not quite five, but close. Anyway, let's go to Nancy in Melville. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. Just wanted to ask a question about that. The garden center out there in Botanical Gardens, would that be, when you're talking about the groups and stuff that you could look up, whatever your interest is there anything out there that would help somebody like me who's like wanting to get better at vegetable gardening, and I could learn from that? Because I've got like a, I don't know, like a 14 by 12 or a large raised bed, and my tomatoes, I think, they just grew for the squirrels because I didn't get any. And then I yellow squash, the skin was real tough and not taste good, and I got a little bit of zucchini, but I tested the soil like you had said, and the soil was great. We didn't have to do anything to it, but I'm wondering if maybe I didn't start everything a little too late, and I don't know how. I just want to get more proficient so that I can garden almost year round. So I'm just trying, is there a place that I could look into through the garden center out there that would help people like me that's new that want to get better?
Yeah, probably there. Probably, I don't think there is, let's say, a plant society for just vegetables. I mean, there's herbs and things like that. But if your soil's in good shape, I would think wherever you got the plant material, did you grow your plants from seed or did you grow the ones that were already started?
They were started.
So, and did you get them from a, I don't want to say a reputable, but a year-round garden center? Because they're going to have a tendency to take care of their plants a lot better than, let's say, a place that's only out for, you know, there for 6 months and then it shuts down.
Well, without naming a name, it was a grocery store.
Oh. The source of your plant material may be the problem.
It was a higher end grocery store, let's just say that. So you think it was where I got them from?
Yes, I do. I think you that probably had a lot to do with it.
Okay. And I have a question. Why, well, I tried to do the zucchini and the yellow squash from seed, and why did it say to make a mound? What's the, is there, is that important to have a mound when it says that on the packet?
That basically says you want to have the root system, the crown of the plant, that's where the leaves and the root system meet. You want to have it higher than the surrounding ground. So in other words, there's no chance that it's going to get too wet.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Because if I'm watering, I don't want all that laying in the
right
ground and all that moisture. Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Have a great day and a great weekend.
Yep. So it's going to, you know, if your soil's in good shape and everything else, it's where your plants came from, and fertilizing too. Now I say, oh, fertilizing just cosmetic, but things like crops do need to be fertilized. So that's something you got to be conscious of as far as that goes too.
I didn't do that. I only fed the tomatoes with Miracle-Gro.
Well, get tomato food, get, you know, fertilizer specifically for certain things, because it's going to have micronutrients in it that, you know, just regular Miracle-Gro doesn't have.
Do I need to mulch my vegetable garden?
No.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Certainly. Now let's go to Keith in Collinsville. Hi, Keith.
Hey, hi there. I got a battle with Bermuda grass.
Ooh.
And it's been a 6-year battle. When I first attacked it, I about this time of the year, I hit it with Roundup. And then I put some cheap 12-12-12 fertilizer to try to get it to come back. Then I hit it again with Roundup. Did the same thing 3 times. Then I burned it off. Then I took a shot back, and I shot back all those cotyledons, or those runners up, and it came back real nice for about a year and a half. And then I got hit with the Bermuda grass again. So I hired a service, and the neighbor had the service come out, and they have this new product called Pilex. Are you do you know about Pilex?
Not specifically, no. Is it is it targeting? Is it one of the herbicides that targets Bermuda grass?
Yes. It's okay. And it It's very, very expensive. They recommend doing it three times a year. It's $180 per application, and it's a three-year process. And they don't guarantee it. So I'm in my second year of this treatment, and right now, all that Bermuda grass is dead. And they're going to do it one more time, and then I'll aerate and then overseed. And my question, I guess, is those cotyledons or the runners that you see in Bermuda grass,
right.
every juncture of that cotyledon is a seed. And I'm afraid that no matter what I do, I'm not going to get rid of this.
That could very well be the case. Now, you're positive that it is Bermuda grass because there's a grass that mimics Bermuda grass, and it's called Nimble, N-I-M-B-L-E, Nimble Will. So Nimble Will is just N-I-M-B-L-E-W-I-L-L. It is a very difficult herbicide or difficult weed that looks like Bermuda grass to get under control. I was at a lady's house, and she had a very specific herbicide to get rid of that. So look at the Nimble Will online and make sure that you have that, because everybody kind of assumes when it looks like your Bermuda grass, that's the only thing it can be, but there is something else.
It's confirmed that it is Bermuda grass
by
the service, and they said the same thing. And those runners, and I just sent my payment in, and I also put a piece of that runner in with my payment, and I said, is this going to do? And I haven't heard back from him yet. But, I mean, and I did that Roundup thing, and it worked, but it just comes back.
Right.
I mean, I even thought about digging up the whole yard and taking a scoop, taking 5 inches of the soil out. But that stuff goes way down deep. And where I live, it was a natural prairie area, so that Bermuda grass has been in there for years.
Right.
And my wife says, just don't look down anymore, look up.
Well, that's what I would have to say. You can get a sod cutter and cut out the Bermuda grass, like pieces of sod, and then leave that area just open. And then anything that starts coming up as a result of cutting the sod off, its sod cutter is going to take about an inch or so, inch and a half of the top of the soil off. Anything that comes up in that area, then go back after it with the herbicides.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted you to know, or if you knew anything about this Pylex, it's P-Y-L-E-X, and they use an eyedropper to apply it. It's very expensive.
Right.
And I didn't know if you had heard about Pylex.
I haven't heard of that one, but like I say, there are certain herbicides that are specifically to target, things like Bermuda grass, things like Nimble Will, or whatever. Really difficult grasses to get under control.
Okay. All right. I guess I'm going to have to just start looking up.
Exactly. Or, golf courses love Bermuda grass. Just put a little golf course in your backyard.
Well, that's what I thought, too. Why couldn't I make a hybrid, like Zoysia?
Right.
Why couldn't you? I mean, why couldn't they just make a hybrid Bermuda grass because it'll kill out and you don't have to cut it. You cut it maybe three times a summer
or
something like that.
Exactly.
So, all right, Mike, thanks.
Yep. And now let's go to Linda in Pacific. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Mike. I have two questions about my surprise lilies. Where the flower used to be, I now see like four or five green pods at the end of the stalk that are a little bit bigger than the size of a pea. What are those?
Those are actually, in theory, seeds, but they're probably not going to be functional seed.
Okay. And then the second thing is the stalks. Can I just cut them off at ground level now, or do I need to leave them up for a while?
Oh, no, you can cut them off. As soon as the flowers start fading or wilting, you can cut the stalks off. It's the leaves that have to stay. The flower stalks on any plant doesn't make any difference as far as health goes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. And now let's go to Becky in St. Charles. Hi, Becky.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I have a question about a white pine.
Okay.
It's generally been very healthy. We keep all the needles around. And the bottom four...
Becky, you're going to have to give us a call back. It looks like you got dropped.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, give us a call back, Becky, and we'll put you right on the top. So let's see if we can get to CJ in Kirkwood. Hi, CJ.
Hi, Mike.
I had a landscape company come out and do mulch and define the beds and add some beds and such. And I think they got carried away with the mulch. I had some good mulch around the existing beds, but they put more mulch on it and up to the trunks of the trees and the shrubs and the hostas and everything. So I've been out pulling it back from the tree trunks and all. But now I've got rings there, and I'm wondering if that's a good thing. So there's like a donut of mulch on top of this crown of mulch around the trees and such. And there, it's also, in some places, it's almost a foot of mulch.
Whoa!
Yeah.
You should never have around trees or shrubs any more than 3 to 4 inches.
Well, they put that much on top of what was already there.
That's crazy.
More. So what do I do now?
I guess you're going to have a yard sale and just sell bags of mulch. No, I mean, you don't want it that deep because it can cause problems. Just even if you got it away from the trunks and the stems and everything else, it could be trouble.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Right.
Tell me what kind of trouble.
Probably fungus, mold, things, related to that.
Gotcha.
Because the mulch, holds a lot of moisture. That's one of the benefits of mulch. But when it's too much, then it holds too much moisture, and then that could cause problems for the things that are below it, like the root systems or whatever, the plant, the stems of the hostas or whatever it is.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll call them up, and we'll have a conversation.
Yeah. They overdid you.
Yeah. Well, they talked about not having enough mulch when they brought the truck here. And I'm thinking, what? Well, now I know.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's see if we can get back to Becky. Becky from St. Charles, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good. We have a 60-foot, approximately, white pine in our front yard. The bottom four branches are dying, and it just seems like they're continuing to die off. We do keep the needles around the bottom of the tree, and the rest of the tree looks healthy. What would cause that?
Old. Those branches are, old, and they're being overshadowed by the other branches that are higher up in the tree.
Okay.
So, that's something that's typically, if you go into a pine forest and you look up, you're not going to see any low branches on any of the pine trees for the most part. You're going to see branches up higher in the tree on the trunk. So you're just, your tree's experiencing exactly what it should be doing.
Okay. And the branches are probably 12 feet in the air, and otherwise it's just trunk.
Below. Right.
Okay. So should we just trim them off?
Yeah. Anything that's dead, doesn't have any needles, get them cut off.
Okay. We were just concerned it had a bug or something.
No.
So. Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Yep. I mean, you got a very mature white pine, so you've been lucky that it has gotten that big. So, but yeah, lower branches, that's exactly what can happen. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. Let's go to John in South St. Louis. Is that where we want to go? Yes. John, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Mike. How about yourself?
Very good.
Good. Mike, I have been trying to put down fertilizer in the spring, in the fall. But then I guess I heard a commercial during the program and saying that it really doesn't do a good job, or it's just purely cosmetic. And I couldn't follow really the train of thought of the advertising. Is there something else that we should be putting on our lawn besides fertilizer?
Well, the fertilizer is fine. I mean, that's, kind of what we routinely do. Get specific types of fertilizer for lawn. Don't use triple 12s or things like that. But yes, core aeration every couple years. Dethatching is very important too. Every couple years, kind of alternating every third year with each one. And putting some compost down. Again, that's to help your soil, to make your soil healthy. Then the cosmetic quality of the fertilizer can do a much better job for it. You can't just depend upon fertilizer to make your, any kind of plant material, whether it's lawn, trees, shrubs, roses, or anything else, good.
I don't know what it was from a commercial, Mike. Was there a product that you were endorsing?
Well, there's a company called Roots Plus. They will come out and auger holes and, you know, take care of your soil and all that other stuff.
Okay. I just want to get a better understanding. I appreciate your advice.
Sure. And I mean, Roots Plus, they're experts in healthy soil. They know what soil does, and you know that's what I've been, you know, harping about this since I worked at the botanical garden with the soils. You know, when I was in the woodland garden, it's crucial to have good soil. There's no getting around it.
Right. No, I agree with you. Okay, I appreciate your advice, buddy.
Yep. Thank you. And now let's go to Chris in McLeansboro, Illinois. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, we have a ornamental Japanese maple, and this year it is not looking as healthy as it has before. From online, just reading, they say you do not fertilize them, or I'm wondering what I need to do.
How old is it?
Well, 15 years old.
Well, we're finding that some of the Japanese maples are starting to head downhill at about that age. So it may be an age factor. But yes, fertilizing doesn't help. I keep harping on this. You know, going out, let's say halfway out from the trunk to however far out the branches go, and some digging some small holes, and then putting some compost in those holes, or using an earth, you know, electric drill with an earth auger, backfilling those with compost, the holes you're drilling. Feed your soil. That's the best thing you can do for your plant, but it may be just an age factor as much as anything.
Okay. Well, I mean, it used to have these, you know, beautiful bright red leaves, and they're an orange looking or even green.
Right. So it sounds like it's on a downhill slide, but you might, you know, try to improve the soil to see if that's going to help, but definitely don't fertilize.
Okay. I have one other question. I have a lilac bush, and I know that they need lots of sun. So I put it in an area where it does get quite a bit of sun. But I had it, and I know it takes about 7 years to find, you know, once you plant it, to get the bloom. I had 2 years of bloom, and now it won't bloom any longer.
And the leaves and everything look healthy?
Yes.
So I would say, are you pruning it?
When it's the dead, I take out of it, but I know, you know, I need to let it grow so it will get its bloom.
Yeah, so I would say just leave it alone. If you have another year where you don't get any flowers, I'd get rid of it.
Okay.
So
right.
There's no magic formula for these kind of things. And we think, well, my great-grandmother had a lilac that was 100 years old or something, but things are not all the same as they used to be.
Well, this actually came from a friend of mine's grandmother. and I had it several years.
Right.
And I thought, well, with the transplanting, you know, they gave me a cutting.
Sure.
That it takes about 7 years.
Right. So you've done everything just right. It's just a matter of keeping your fingers crossed and hopefully it'll recover. If not, then you just have it as lilac with just leaves and no flowers.
All right. Well, I know my husband says, I think it's about time you get rid of it.
See, that's what I said, too.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
We've got about 10 minutes or so, not quite 10 minutes, for the Garden Hotline. 10 o'clock, Investing Sense with Andy Smith and Bob Richards. 11 o'clock, the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show with Scott Mosby. And 1 o'clock, the Rick Edelman Show. Then there's all kinds of other stuff for the rest of the day as well. Back to the phones. Jim lives in St. Charles. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for all the help that you provided everyone over the last many years. I've got a mole problem. I've got two moles in my yard, one on both sides of the yard. And I treated about 3 weeks ago with GrubX because I also know some grubs. But I've had lots of people tell me lots of different ways to get rid of the moles before I start putting poison pinnets down or the worms or the traps. What would you suggest? What's the best way to try to get rid of these things?
Basically realize that the moles, their main diet is earthworms. So grub right. control does very little. That's like saying, okay, let's go to dinner, but don't have an appetizer. So you got rid of the appetizers, but the dinners are still there. So, I mean, there is no other way to get around it. I mean, there has been people that watch for the tunnels, you know, just sit in a lawn chair or whatever. And as soon as the tunnels start popping up, they go out there with a spade and pop them up out of the ground.
and that's the only thing that's worked consistently for me, but that's not working this year.
So, I mean, the traps, that's about the only thing that's really been proven. And it's multiple traps along the active tunnel areas. There's not too much else.
Okay. I thought that that was probably the answer, but like I said, the most successful thing I've had is push the trails down and just stand for 20 minutes and then watch them move up. But they've been too crafty for me this year. They haven't. that hasn't worked.
Well, probably the ground has been very dry, so maybe the earthworms are a little bit deeper, so they're not making the. I mean, that's why they're going along the buffet line, which is right on the surface.
Okay. Well, thanks so much again for all the help that you provided.
Sure. Now let's go. Stay in St. Charles County, but go to St. Peter's in the Kirchyard. Hi, Kurt.
Hey, Mike. Tell me, what do you think about allowing ivy vines to grow on tree trunks?
I don't think it hurts at all.
Okay.
The only time it becomes problematic is when it grows out over the branches and then causes those branches not to have any leaf buds. That's when it's trouble. But you can go all over the country and see some really old trees with a lot of ivy on the trunks. And it doesn't hurt the trunk whatsoever.
Okay, very good. I had just heard, we just moved into a piece of property that's got some, a clump of like three, these are maple trees, are rather large. They've been here for a while, and there's ivy growing up the sides, and some people have been telling me, take that ivy down, it's going to kill those trees.
No, it doesn't.
But it doesn't happen. It looks good. Okay, thanks. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, and like I said, only when it starts going out over the branches and prevents the branches from being able to do any foliage, because leaves are how trees make foliage. Nutrients, moisture from the root system sends it up to the leaf, and the leaf uses sun to make chlorophyll, which is food. So thanks, Kurt. And now let's go to Crestwood. Cindy, how are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Good.
So I have in my front yard a flower bed that's landscaped with the landscape rocks, and it has two big evergreens, which I want to get rid of, and then remove all the rock and plant some new plants. But my question is, when I get rid of those evergreens, should I have that stump and the roots removed, and then can I plant new plants in that spot?
They can grind the stump out. They cannot get the roots out unless they came in with a bobcat and dug them out.
Okay. So I should, would you recommend that the stump be grinded out?
Well, it accelerates, let's say decomposition of the root system a little bit, but the roots, depending upon what kind of plant, how old, how healthy it was, can last for multiple years after the trunk has been ground out and after the tree has been removed.
So is it just a risk then to plant something in over that?
Right. So, I mean, you could have them come in, take that stuff out, and then come in with a heavy-duty rototiller and see if you can tear up a bunch of the root systems, that way. But still, you're taking somewhat of a chance depending upon what you're trying to grow in there.
Okay, and I haven't decided what to put there
right yet.
This is just in the planning process. And then I also have a fireleaf maple tree that's dying, so I'm going to have that removed. Would you recommend getting that stump grinded as well?
Well, it's stump grinding. I don't know how much that actually does, to be honest. It's more of a cosmetic thing. It's more of a mental thing. Yes, it does, like I said, accelerate the decline of the root systems, but it's not going to make the huge amount of difference. It's not going to mean, okay, we ground out the stump, now you can plant. It's not going to happen.
So, okay.
So, I mean, the choice is up to you. I'm just saying it doesn't really do all that much as far as causing the root system to decline.
So, if I didn't remove the stumps from the flower bed, I would just have to plant around them.
Right.
Okay.
And then,
okay.
I mean, they're only going to grind out the stump like about, 8 to 10 to 12 inches. So there's still solid wood underneath that. So, I mean, it doesn't get rid of the stump by, trunk stump or anything. So thanks, Cindy. Let's go to Neil in St. Louis. Hi, Neil.
Hey, man, I'm so glad to get you. I have three peach trees. One is like 5 years old. The other one, 2 and 3. They bear fruit this year, so
whoa.
I know I'm late. Huh? They already done bear fruit.
Yeah, you're really lucky because it's just, usually that's not going to happen at that young of an age.
You ain't, wait now, slow down with your short wind, but I know I'm late for what I'm talking for this year. They're bearing, I got fruit, and the fruit is wormy.
Oh.
I need to know who I can call to next year. I'll start in the foot to make sure that I get rid of the worms. I got to call somebody to spray. Do you have a telephone number for somebody professional in that department? I want to spray my fruit tree for worms.
Okay, basically you need to go to your favorite garden center and see who they would recommend. Since you live in the city of St. Louis, try Bayer's. And then see who they would recommend to do that.
What's their name?
Bayer's, Bayers. They're on Hampton Avenue.
Bayers.
Thanks, Neil. And thanks to everybody for calling in. Sorry, we kind of ran out of time. We couldn't get to everybody. But this is a time of year where things are starting to transition from summer into fall. So, but, if you've got a problem historically with cool season weeds, the pre-emergence got to go down very, very soon. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.